The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the K4Wins. K4Wins.com. K, the number 4Wins.com. It's the third Saturday in October. You know what that means. And I already love a big sign. The Tennessee-Alabama game. We got that going on. Only in 9 undefeated teams in college football right now. Is Indiana really the third best college football team in the country? We'll talk about that. And yes, we're doing everything we can to get our partner on, Kip Kiefer, who of course is on. We have Case Kiefer. He is of course the chief editor of the Las Vegas Sun down below us, live from Las Vegas. We have Kai Gregory, who's been gambling his entire life on both sides. He knows everything about handicapping and the handicapping business. He joins us on the right-hand side of the screen. I'm Tony Curry. We've been doing radio, sports radio for 40 years, worked at ESPN. And Kip Kiefer, who's the executive director of the Birmingham Racecourse and Casino, will hopefully join us here in just a few minutes, having some technical difficulties, but it's his birthday. His birthday was yesterday, so we wish him a happy belated birthday. It's going to be a fantastic day as long as he joins the show, and we'll get after it. It's going to be a fantastic day. So we got lots to get into, lots of college football. We always like to start on where we were for the past week on this Tuesday show. By the way, you can check us out on Tuesdays and Fridays at 10 o'clock Central, right here, SR1029thegame.com. Also, of course, the Digital Sports Network, which is on Coastal. Also, Tony Curry Radio, now into our fifth year of bringing you some of the finest podcast and finest gambling information. I also want to welcome a couple of good friends of mine who are listening from VSIN, V-S-I-N, Brett Musburger's little shindig out there in Las Vegas, that big shindig. They're listening to the show today. We greatly appreciate them giving some big ears today. But how did we do this last week, Kai?
You know, you hate to report things like this, but you got to go the good and the bad. Last week, worst week that we've had in our brief two-year history, 17-17-3 against the spread. So just lost some juice there. Last month, 93-51-6. College football, still 64-35 to start the year. So, you know, even if we lose a game tonight, you know, we're going to be right at 64% college football. Year-to-date, 854. 472-21.
Very nice. We'll take a 17-17 every once in a while. As long as we don't have back-to-back losers, we're good to go. And that's how it works in the gambling business. As long as you don't mount it up. We have more winning weekends than loser weekends for sure. And we've got just a fantastic board. I love this time of the year going into week eight, Case. First of all, I want you to tell me, since you are the man and you know exactly what's going on, we always talk about where that public money is going. There's a couple of games just jumped off the board at me. We call them smelly fishes. But what are some of those games you saw that jumped out to you right off the bat here on a Saturday, because you like to put your stuff in early?
It wasn't as much of a week where a whole lot jumped out right away. I will say I haven't looked back at the market till right now, seeing how things move. But one of the biggest games of the and of course now it's moved there, so I'm giving out no information. But I was shocked that Georgia opened less than a touchdown against Ole Miss. I made the game like 8. I slammed 6.5, one of my bigger bets so far. And I haven't been on Georgia all year, as you guys know, but I think their defense is trending up. And Ole Miss's offense, to me, is kind of stagnated, even though I know last week was a tough spot against Washington State. So I was pretty stunned yesterday when that opened 6.5. I bet as much as I could on that. But now it is at 7.5 and 8, which is about where I thought it should be. You mentioned the other big SEC game, I guess, Alabama-Tennessee. It's kind of stayed in the same place, it looks like, to be a little bit different than the Georgia game right at 8. Also kind of makes sense to me. I hate it, but it feels like I'm flipping back and forth. This week I am on a lot of favorites. I kind of lean Alabama in that game too. Another game where I really like the favorite that's kind of hit into the right spot, but I was pretty surprised when you could get even late Saturday night. I think there was some 7.5 at the first sportsbook that opened here, Notre Dame over USC. I'm super high on the Irish right now. USC, I know I never boil it down to being this easy, but if we all just bet on them at home since they joined the Big Ten and bet against them away, we'd have a lot more money right now. I'm down in grading them even more when they travel to the East Coast, and I think Notre Dame is just a wagon right now. I know they have 2 losses.
You were all over them again this past week, and I jumped on board just because of you, and it was a big number. And of course, they got the cover, but good for you. Yeah, I was following that because what was the line? 22, 23.5 or something like that. I was like, wow, that's a big number. And of course, that defense is playing really, really well. The best 2-loss team, and it'd be a shame. They are one of the best 12 teams in college football for sure.
Yeah, I'm crossing my fingers they get in. So, yeah, a lot of the big games this week, I'm on the favorite. It's kind of different than last week, which I had a bad week, admittedly. I think it was my first losing week since week zero, but almost got it back because my biggest bet was Indiana. Luckily, I had some money lines, so they got me some of it back. But, yeah, more favorites this week.
Yeah, it's hard to believe Indiana 26.5 against Michigan State. I know Michigan State's not good, but this is the same Michigan State that made the playoffs several years ago. I'm like, wow, that's a big number. You mentioned that Georgia. I'm sitting here looking at a 7 right now against an undefeated Ole Miss squad. A&M Arkansas, A&M giving up 7.5. And by the way, I do want to blow my own horn. I did have Georgia and A&M at a two-team parlay there for our starting lineup show. So I like to make some bucks on that. I love that A&M game, and I love Georgia only giving up the 4. That thing shot up to like 4.5 right before kickoff as well. Vandy LSU normally would not be a game I'd be looking at, but I'm sniffing around a pair of 5-1 teams. That game only 2.5. And also, of course, Mississippi State at Florida. Florida giving up 8.5. Is it also interesting? The one name that kind of we're talking about, and he already mentioned that maybe the line's too small, so now I will settle a second guessing because you guys do this for a living. But I love that the Texas Longhorns giving up 12 on the road to Kentucky. Kentucky has given up 35 to Georgia, South Carolina. Hell, they give up 23 to Eastern Michigan. You got a Texas squad who's playing lights out great on defense right now. They're only giving up 11 points a ball game. I know it's on the road. I know it's at the Commonwealth. But if Kentucky, I don't think Kentucky can put up more than 10 or 11 points against them, which means they got to put a 23 spot up for the Texas Longhorns. So I'm loving them. Kentucky is 4-1 in over-unders this year, but I'm kind of liking them. What's sticking out to you so far, Kai?
You know, first I'd like for us to take a moment of silence for the great and powerful and overrated James Franklin and his Penn State Nittany Lions. You know, we don't have to take a moment of silence for Trent Dilfer, but we need to take a moment of silence for James Franklin. It's over. Okay, moving on. Some things that have jumped up. Louisville stepping up in competition at Miami this week. The line's 14. I really want to lay that. Georgia Tech catching points at Duke. I know Duke's been, you know, okay. But Duke's got the 109th third down conversion defense and Georgia Tech's 28 on third down conversions. Really loving that. Houston only being a 1-point favorite at home against Arizona is jumping out to me. Somebody knows something I don't know. That one's kind of crazy. Memphis only giving up 21 to UAB. I guess they're thinking, hey, the interim coach bump there. Because Memphis has just been
battle of the bones, my friend. Battle of the bones, and of course, Alex Mortensen, right, who is the son of the late great Chris Mortensen, he will join us on the starting lineup next week. So we're looking forward to having the coach in. And just based on the hire we had before, and it's got the phone with Mark Ingram several moments ago before the show, you may see Alex get that gig. So we'll see.
You know, I'm wondering if the Michigan State Indiana game, if it's going to be a letdown for Indiana. You know, after Oregon, Iowa, and Illinois stretch, there was somebody else in there, but just those three. Going to see how good Cignetti and Mendoza are, I think, in that stance. I'm really looking forward to a game that nobody else in the country is thinking about, but UNLV and Boise, and I don't get why UNLV is catching 12 there.
You've been on the Reds all year, by the way.
They're
getting it done, yeah.
They have been. They're on the road. So, you know, that's kind of going. There's a lot of other games. I'm sure we'll get into them. But I've already laid some, including Memphis. I'm going to love Memphis team total over as well. No matter what it is, it's going to be 50. I'm still going to like it. But some interesting things I found out from this weekend, some Tony Curry useless stats I wanted to throw at you. No more ranked teams on Miami's schedule the rest of the year. Really sets up well for them. You know, Ole Miss now has – at Georgia, at Oklahoma, and then South Carolina. A&M's at Arkansas, at LSU, at Missouri. November 15th is their next home game. November 15th. Just kind of crazy. Going to be interesting to see. You know, one of the things you talked about, who would you guess? This is big. There's 136 teams. What quarterback has been sacked more than anybody else in the country?
Come on, I have no clue.
Luke Altmyer, 23 times.
There you go.
Kind of crazy. And I know we're going to get into it and talk a little bit about it, but Tennessee's defense is horrid. They've given up 24, 26, 31, 34, and 44
Yeah, let's go right there. Let's go right there. They have not knocked off Alabama at Bryant-Denny since 2003. They have not won back-to-back games since 2003-2004. This has been obviously a platform where Alabama's done extremely well over the last couple of decades, and they're only giving up 8.5. And the scary thing, 58.5 is the over in that game. The scary thing about that for Tennessee is their secondary and their defense. They're siphoned. I mean, they're just giving it up. And Alabama's obviously healthy now on both sides of the ball offensively. Speaking, Ty Simpson, 16 touchdowns, one pick. I mean, this guy, and listen, I'm not sure, and I know Carson Beck, he's got the big ball game against Louisville. He can certainly pad his numbers and really put up a big sign. I think it's really between those two guys right now, and you can certainly look at the numbers. I think it's 300 and 320 right now are the odds. But Ty Simpson, man, the gauntlet of teams he's played, teams the last 3 weeks, now he's playing another top 25 team this year. Right now, SOS, Alabama number one, Tennessee number 47. So this is a pair of teams that's been tested a little bit. They've had a couple of teams that have, I mean, as tested as you can get going into week 8, for God's sakes. But you got Alabama.
Yeah, Alabama is. Tennessee, I don't think really is. Tennessee has the number one offense in the SEC at 527 yards a game and 48 points a game. Alabama's, I think, seventh with 431 yards. But the difference is the defense. Alabama is number four in the SEC, giving up 292 yards, 17 points a game. Tennessee's 14th, giving up 29.3 points a game. The only one giving up more is Arkansas, and 393 yards. But the biggest, one of the biggest metrics, and I like looking at this once we get past week 7, Alabama is top 20 defense in defensive stop rates midseason, and 73%, only giving up 1.73 points per drive, okay, per possession. Whereas Tennessee is 91st, stop percentage of 57.8%, giving up 2.48 points per possession. You know, I was in Knoxville this weekend, and even with the help of the crowd, Tennessee getting off the field on third down is a huge problem. Hobbs came back this week, got banged up again, and is out. I don't think McCoy or – I don't think we're going to get any of the guys back from this past weekend. And, you know, hopefully Bishop's going to be back. I want to see how Jam Miller is, you know, came out with a concussion in the last game there in the fourth quarter, if he's going to be back or not for Alabama, because I think that is absolutely huge for Alabama. But watch Ty Simpson pick Tennessee apart across the middle.
Yep. Well, and he should. And again, I think this could solidify his Heisman Trophy. I can't believe we're talking about Ty Simpson for a Heisman Trophy. Where are those odds at right now, Case? And I mean, 16 touchdowns, one pick. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, I'd seen I'd love if you were right, because I only have Carson Beck at the top guy. So I'd love if it was a two-man race. But the odds I've kind of seen are a three-man race. I think there's three guys below 5-1 and basically everywhere. And that is Beck, Ty Simpson, and Fernando Mendoza. I'm a little bit worried about Beck, even though he honestly might be my vote right now, is just because a lot of people, I mean, I don't get it because his stats aren't really there. He's been amazing. He might be the top pick in the draft second, but a lot of people are rallying for Reuben Bain of Miami's. He's been such a wrecker on defense. I still feel like when it gets down to the brass tacks, you have to bet like one of the, you have not bet, when you have to vote for one of those guys. I mean, Beck is the guy putting up the numbers as much as Bain has done. I mean, he has a couple turnovers. I think he only has like less than a sack per game. So I don't really know if he has the statistical production to be in the conversation, but it is a real concern that it seems like Miami has two guys that are kind of pulling votes away. We'll see if that solidifies here. I'm also a little worried. I know I'm beating a dead horse and I say it like every week, but I actually I'm on the other side of Kai. I bet a little bit of Louisville plus 14 the other night. I just feel like what Miami does every game is going to come back to bite them at some point. We've seen it for years now. This is probably their best team, but even this year, they absolutely crush everyone at the beginning of the game because they have the better players. They, I mean, everything's in place. They should be able to win a national title, but they get up to these big leads and then they just literally try to run out to the clock. They just, you know, are content to maybe get a first down or two and punt it back. We've seen Florida State almost backdoor disaster them. Notre Dame almost came back to beat them. I know they pretty much stomped on South Florida, but like the vast majority of games this year follows the same script. They just can't maintain a lead because they get into the most conservative shell I've ever seen. And I'm still very worried that's going to come back to bite them. There's really only two places left on their schedule that could happen. Louisville and SMU, I think, are the only two teams that are capable. But, I mean, Louisville's pretty relentless, even though the offense has been a downgrade this year. Hasn't been to the level that we were expecting. I mean, you have a great play caller, excuse me, and Brohm, and I just don't like the way Miami operates once they get these leads. So
it seems to be a little bit of an Achilles heel for Mario Cristobal too. If you look at his career, he's always, whenever he does have a winning squad, he always plays not to lose. It just
exactly
feels that, and he always, and it's like he can't believe he's got a good team. And you know, you mentioned the fact too, Kai, and I think this is worthy of mention, the fact they're not playing any other more teams, and I guess what the ACC championship game, who are they going to play? And whoever they're going to be playing, they're going to be a heavy favorite against. So right now, it's Miami or the highway.
Look out for UVA on the other side. I just the way Virginia's playing.
Georgia Tech, I mean, undefeated. I mean, it's crazy in the ACC right now. It really is.
I know. And Georgia Tech, a relatively small favorite this week. Mm-hmm. All right.
Small dog.
Okay, well, if they're a small dog against anybody but Miami in their conference, I'll take Georgia Tech. I love Haynes King. Absolutely love him. He showed that he was a dog last year. Yep, that's right. I'm going to use the phrase that all these people seem to be using. And I think he's proving it again. You know, it worries me a little bit with how much he runs, but it's not like he's facing the SEC defenses that hit you hard every week. So that's, you know, beneficial to him. I don't think he's going to be a pro quarterback, but golly, he's good.
Yeah, we're going through all the games. We do this on the Tuesday. Things just kind of stick out to us. And, of course, we do our show on Friday. We'll get more specific of how our old plays. We'll give up plays between now and then, too. We got some Major League Baseball, some NHL hockey to get into, and, of course, a basketball season right around the corner. We actually have the Pelicans and the Houston Rockets in town here in Birmingham later on tonight. Looking forward to seeing some NBA preseason. We have some bets on that as well, so I'm looking forward to that. I did want to mention one game we have not brought up yet because we are down here in the South. The Auburn Tigers just got absolutely ramrodded in the backside again. You said it a million times. Weird things happen at Auburn, and that was the weird thing. I'm not an Auburn fan. I've always made my money in Alabama. I don't really have a dog in the hunt. I root for them, obviously, for the state. I love to see both teams undefeated when they play each other in the Iron Bowl. But I'm looking at that play thinking to myself, I don't know what exactly they were looking at. I could see the ball moving barely, but I mean, a 17-0 halftime lead is a hell of a lot better than a 10-3. And of course, Georgia got the ball to start the second half and it was over. They just shut them down. Georgia's defense, by the way, they're making fantastic adjustments at halftime. They did it against Alabama, they did it against Auburn, but the Auburn Tigers get screwed. Now they got to come home at 3-3, and now they're playing a team that Alabama just knocked off by 3. Mizzou is actually giving up a point and a half. What do you like in that game, Case? Auburn at home, it seems like they'd be a little hurt, but are they resilient enough to get out of the hole and knock off Missouri for the second week in a row?
I had nothing on this game. I made it a pick'em. It basically is. So I guess if you absolutely made me choose, I would be on Missouri, but I highly doubt I'm going to get to a bet there. I think Missouri played very well against Alabama. I had them plus 3.5. That was an easy cover. I mean, they easily could have won the game. Auburn, it's just what a mess. I mean, I hate all the coach speak. I've had to waste most of my life listening to it, but sometimes there's something to be said for it. And you hear all these coaches say all the time that you can't just let, you know, one thing that goes against you ruin the whole game. And I feel like that's just what happened. They took on the persona of their coach when I do think they got screwed on the call that it should have been a touchdown to go up 17-0 on Georgia, but then they just lost it and they just weren't the same the whole rest of the game. So I know some people on the show hate Eli Drinkwitz, but I give Drinkwitz a huge edge in the coaching department. I trust him way more than Hugh Freeze. I think what he's done at Missouri is I know they've gotten some real big advantages, you know, easy schedule year after year. But, you know, with the resources and the state of this program compared to who they're going up against, I think he's done a really good job in Missouri. And to go back to the Penn State coaching search, there's very few guys that I think you can hire that I would give the check mark to. Eli Drinkwitz is one of them. So the coaching edge to me is in Missouri's corner. I think offensively is a Missouri's corner. I do think Auburn has the better defense, but it just looks like kind of a coin flip to me.
I will say this. I have a ton of Auburn friends who are just huge fans. They go to every single game away and home, and they did. They went into the season not one. They either wanted a train wreck so they could get rid of Hugh Freeze because a lot of people didn't like the Hugh Freeze hire. I don't know why, even though they're all in. You see these family shirts that says Auburn all in. They're all family. It doesn't matter who they hire. They can hire, you know, Sister Mary at the poor, and they're going to get behind her all the way 100%. That's what you do down there because they're family down there. That's the culture. But they were kind of hoping to see this thing just end up in a train wreck so they can move on and get under the coach. I'm not sure which coach they'd get down there. And all of a sudden, Hugh Freeze, he's coaching well enough this year, and he should have won that ball game. I mean, they could very easily be 5-5-1. They really could be. And so, I mean, that's the one thing that I look for in my teams anyways. I just want to see improvement. I want to see my team get out there and get it done. And you're right. The Auburn Tigers, they look like they had them up against the ropes. That second half, I think their first four offensive series, they went 3-and-out 3 times. And the other 10, they had like 17 yards. They offensively, now they weren't busting balls either, but it could have had a chance. 17 points up against Georgia in the first half would not be bad against that defense. But man, they just fell apart, and it was demoralizing for them. It really was. I mean, it was like, I mean, if you're my Auburn friends were like, what is going on? Are the college football gods just against us, or what the hell's going on? And I'm just like to remind them, well, some special things have happened down there too in your favor. So, try not to take too much. A couple of things I'll look at real quick. Penn State. You mentioned Franklin getting fired. A little bit of a surprise is happening during the season, because I think we went into the season thinking that certainly they were a preseason top five pick. They now lost 3 games. They're only catching 3 on the road to Iowa. That could be a really ugly ball game. Utah giving up 3.5 at BYU. BYU's been that sneaky good undefeated team. They're doing really, really well this year. I think that's a really interesting game. And then Oklahoma giving up 5.5 at South Carolina, I think is a very interesting ball game as well. And let's not remiss here, USC, you talked about Notre Dame. Notre Dame only giving up 8.5 to a USC squad that a lot of people thought maybe out west could vie for one of those 12 positions. Any of those games kind of piquing your interest, guys?
I like some things tonight, but yeah, those games will. I mean, I'm going to take Utah. I think they're better than BYU. Playing at BYU's hard, but it's the Battle of the Mormons and all that up there. But I want to go back. I mean, I got to disagree with Case on one thing in the Missouri-Auburn game. Missouri's defense, although they haven't played the schedule Auburn's had, they got the number 2 defense in the SEC, giving up 224 yards a game and like 10 points, whereas Auburn is 10th, giving up 312 yards and 17 points per game. But Auburn's offense is just so pathetic. 15th in the SEC, whereas Missouri's is 4th in the SEC. Jumping back into the games you talked about, those are Saturday, and I'm waiting. I mean, it's really strange because I'm more excited again, and thanks, Joey, for the message there, but I'm more excited to see the Air Force game this weekend against Wyoming, and I'm more excited to see UNLV and Boise just because of the offenses, the way they're playing, the defenses. You know, can't wait for those games.
Yeah. By the way, first week this year that we've got college football every single night of the week. College football on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We're loving that. It goes all the way through next week. So
South Alabama tonight, facing the Fighting Butch Joneses. I'll go ahead and lay the 7. Butch Jones sucks.
And you mentioned some of those early games too before Saturday. You do have that Miami game, that Miami Louisville game, cut up on Friday, which is going to be very, very interesting. Miami giving up 13.5. So yeah, man, when you can spread it out over the entire week, that's pretty good stuff. We'll get in the National Football League here, and also Major League Baseball, some NHL stuff as well, because we got some hockey fans out there. Listen, we're all about making money, even if you don't like watching hockey or you're really into it. I understand it. If we give you the plays and you're making money on it, perhaps you'll start watching a little bit more. It's a lot of fun. Of course, we got a guy who's right in the backyard of Las Vegas Knights, and a big fan of them as well, and writes not only for them but also for those Las Vegas Raiders. Let's move to the National Football League right now and talk about those Raiders a little bit. Nice game this past weekend. You are the inside man. You're in the locker room. What's going on with the Las Vegas Raiders? You have somewhat of a shit-eating grin on your face as well. I'm not sure what that's all about, but let's talk about some National Football League. What you got, man?
I promise I'll get there, but just one thing, we'll have the delayed argument here. I'm going to channel Kip. I think Kip would be on my side with this. The total stats just mean absolutely nothing to me. I mean, look at who Auburn's played versus who Missouri's played. Missouri's defense has been better than I thought. They got a lot of athletic guys. They haven't been bad, but if you give me Auburn's personnel on defense or Missouri's personnel, you can go ahead and go with Missouri. I'll take Auburn every time. I just think they haven't played anybody. Their strength of schedule sucks, trying to sound like Kip. He also said before we move on from college that he likes South Carolina in that Oklahoma game. I didn't have anything on that one either. That's a man, Mateer probably shouldn't have been playing, although I get wanting to play, and people that are second guessing it now. I mean, I don't think they were winning that game with Hawkins. So I got sucked into betting Oklahoma thinking he could be good enough to win. But I think the hand clearly held him back. I've heard people say otherwise. Like, oh, his passes still had some zip. Like, that's not what he's looked like.
Yeah, he had 3 picks. That was unorthodox for him.
Yeah, the hand clearly held him back there. So, yeah, NFL. I mean, I don't know if I would describe, I forget how you described the Raiders win, a good win. I don't know if I would describe it as a good win. That was the ugliest, game ever. But two of
any wins a winner, my friend, when you're playing like the Raiders, any wins a winner.
Yeah. It was so ugly. I mean, basically the Raiders just, I think realized how helpless the Titans were, and they basically didn't even try once they got a lead. They're like, you guys, there's no way you're scoring on us. Defensively, they just had a hold over them. And I know we poured one out for James Franklin, so let's pour one out for Brian Callahan, too. Of course, NFL first coach fired, not something you can bet in Las Vegas, but something you can bet offshore. And I know a lot of people were on the edge of their seats, especially this year with, I know a lot of people that bet Mike McDaniel seemed like he had the inside track. He was the favorite for the long time, but Callahan catches him at the wire and goes down. I think he finished 4-19 maybe straight up. And I think even 3-20 or something against the spread. So literally, I think in the time I've been covering the NFL, not from a betting standpoint, I've covered the NFL for 15 years, but since I've covered the NFL, professionally, 5 years, by far the worst coaching hire ever made. So I think it's good for the Titans to start over, maybe see what they can coax something out of Cam Ward next year. But the Raiders now go to Kansas City, where they've played pretty well. I mean, they should have won 2 years in a row there. If you remember last year, they fumbled the snap in the final seconds when they're setting up for a field goal. They infamously won on Christmas Day 2 years ago when the Chiefs went on to win the Super Bowl. One thing I kind of liked in that game was the over. I haven't seen how the markets moved this morning. Again, I saw, but I think I bet over 47 on the look ahead line. I know the Raiders offense has been terrible, but I really think they just didn't show much against the Titans. Like I said, they got up and kind of went into a shell. So I can see them scoring a little bit on this Chiefs defense. And I don't know if I'd necessarily give it out on a play here and say it's a great bet, but I mean, the Raiders are 12. I kind of feel like they play the Chiefs closer than that. I feel like the Chiefs, we've gone from one extreme to the other. A few weeks ago, everyone couldn't wait to bet against them and this team's done, whatever. Now they're back up to rated as the best team in the NFL. So not saying the Raiders will win, but they've played well there and I could see them keeping it close this week.
The head coach of the Detroit Lions says it's going to take 30 to win. He was right. Kansas City scored 30. They only scored 17. So he gets it done. What's going on with my Cincinnati Bengals? I say that I'm a Cincinnati Bengals fan, so we're going to talk about it. My son, who's a huge fan, is a boo-hooer. He's like, they suck, blah, 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 blah. They're 2-4 right now. It is the Pittsburgh Steelers division to win. But they just brought in Joe Flacco, and I've loved what Tomlin said about that. He's like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to make this league competitive? Stop giving Cincinnati a quarterback. Listen, you can make an outside argument that Joe Flacco is a Hall of Famer. He's won a Super Bowl. He's got one of the best road records of any guy in the playoffs and playoff history. I think he's aloof. I think he's a knucklehead. I think he's a goofball, but he is a good quarterback, and that's what they need in Cincinnati. The receivers just want a quarterback that can put the ball in their hands. What happened when Joe Flacco got traded to Cincinnati Bengals as far as any futures go? Do you know? I mean, I actually feel like Cincinnati's got a shot to win that, not so much win the division, but at least if they go 500, I think they have a shot.
The market didn't move at all, basically, on poor Flacco. The market did not move at all when Dylan Gabriel got announced the starter 2 weeks ago. So that's not a very good sign that the market takes it that you're equal to a rookie that had never played. And it didn't move at all when the Bengals got him. I got to say, I felt similarly. I thought it was, if you're going to trade for someone, I thought you could do better than 41-year-old Joe Flacco who can't move. But I think he looked pretty good in the Packers game. He's placed the Packers twice now. I think he looked better in that game than he did when he faced him with the Browns, even though the Browns somehow won that game.
Listen, Packers got one of the best defenses in the National Football League
So even though I'm a Flacco pessimist, I think if you are a Bengals fan like yourself, I think you feel a little bit better about how he played against the Packers. He looked like an upgrade from Browning. We'll see what they can do on a short week here. I bet some Pittsburgh on the look ahead line. I don't know if I'd necessarily add to it at 5.5. I feel like Pittsburgh's playing way above their heads. I don't think this is going to continue, but I also don't know if this is the week where I want to jump into Cincinnati with a backup quarterback, even though, again, Flacco, I thought looked pretty good, better than I expected on Sunday.
Game of the week, the Bucs, the Lions. Right now, it looks like Mayfield could be your winner of the MVP. He is playing lights. I had a couple of huge plays this past weekend. Fun to watch. 5-1 take on the Lions, 4-2. What about the Eagles and Vikings, Kai? The Eagles, of course, have dropped back-to-back games after starting undefeated. And then, of course, you have a Vikings squad. They're going on the road, but all they've beat is the Browns, the Bengals, and the Bears. I kind of like the Eagles in this matchup. What do you like?
Sunday, I'm still waiting. I'm looking at all that. I don't care that Kip just texted and said Flacco old ball is not going to make a difference. I disagree. I think Cincinnati wins the game tonight. I don't want them plus 5.5. I got a money line. I think Flacco shows up. I think Cincinnati shows up tonight at home and wins the game outright.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
with his old balls.
Yeah. and that line, Cincinnati catching 5.5. A couple other games, interesting games, Rams and Jags. The Jags are playing pretty good. Before we get into that game, though, I'm going to go to Case because I wanted to get some more on this Eagles line. I'm wondering why the Eagles have not shown up the last couple weeks, only putting up 17 points in their last two ball games. Why is that, Case?
I mean, they've kind of been hit or miss offensively ever since Hurts and Sirianni have been there. I mean, we forget now because they were so good at the end of the year and obviously won the Super Bowl and were blowing out everyone. But we kind of went through this stretch in the middle of the season last year where they couldn't throw the ball at all. Now, the difference was Saquon Barkley just had an insane year last year. I mean, one of the best running back years we've ever seen. But, it's not just because everything clicks for a small amount of time or even every play or even a player like him goes off for a while. That doesn't establish a new baseline. You're not just going to play at that high of a level forever going forward. I know we might have been the only show I heard. We were, relatively pessimistic on the Eagles coming into the year. I know we didn't pick them to miss the playoffs or anything, but, Kai and I were in agreement. We pointed out that they lost more on defense than people are thinking of. It's crazy. I mean, he won't win it because he doesn't have the stats and he also's not playing enough. But Jalen Carter's got to be like one of the most valuable defensive players in the league. When he hasn't played, yeah. They've gone from no one can move the ball on them to the two games he's missed. Teams pile up points. I know you asked about the offense, but I don't know. I just feel like this is the Jalen Hurts experience. It seems like every year dating back to even college, maybe not his final year at Oklahoma as he was in such a good system. And I know they put up big points every week, but it seems like he has stretches where he's just lights out and stretches where he looks below average. So to me, now it's about timing when to come back in on the Eagles, because I do think they will they'll get it back together and start this ascent. They'll reel off 5 or 6 straight wins. I don't necessarily know that it's this week at the Vikings. I had the number just about where it is in market. I made the Eagles a 2-point favorite. I think that's right where it is. I have no bets on this game, which is very rare for me. I usually have at least a side or total or something on just about every game by now. But long term, I think the Eagles will be just fine, not win the Super Bowl or anything. But I think it's kind of overblown just how worried we are about their offense right now.
I love me some Eagles -2.5 right now. I really do. Colts and Chargers 5-1 against a 4-2 squad coming up here in that late frame coming up on Sunday. You guys ain't like that. And by the way, we're going to continue to do K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com, at K4Winners on all social media platforms. Of course, you can find us here on the Coastal Digital Sports Network, Tony Curry Radio, and also want to welcome Veasan and their big ears listening to our show today. We greatly appreciate it. Always trying to expand our brand and could not do it without the fine folks like at Coastal and Tony Curry Radio. Any other games that you talk about the Colts and Chargers? I know you've been all over the Colts all year long, Kai. Do you like their shots? And they're actually catching a couple points there against the Chargers on the road this weekend.
I'm not betting against Indiana Jones. I'm just not at all. I'm not betting against him. It's not the greatest spot for them. It's not the greatest matchup. But until he goes and blows a game the way he's playing and the running game, the defense, yeah, but the way Daniel Jones is playing, the way the running game is playing, the way Indianapolis blocks. I love their offensive line. I'm just not getting away from them.
Any thoughts or Case?
I honestly can't even tell you why. I think it must have been on a look ahead, but I bet some under 48.5, which is still available. My thought was, I guess at the time, I think both these defenses are a little better than people realize, and maybe that's still the case now after last week. They both gave up a lot of points. I think especially the Chargers defense, they haven't had their pass rush down, but they still got a lot of playmakers. The Colts, this took a hit when Charvarius Ward got hurt in warm-ups, right? And so did Anthony Richardson, now on IR with an eye injury from a band. That was pretty wild. So I didn't have any strong feelings on the side. I'm kind of anti-Chargers right now with their offensive line woes. We'll monitor the injury report and see if Joe Alt is back this week. I think he makes a huge difference. Then you don't have to play two extremely mediocre tackles. If he's back, I could see myself maybe being on the Chargers. But for right now, I'm on the under.
I don't know why I think this, and maybe it's just because it's a great conference matchup, but something tells me this Washington-Dallas game means something. Am I missing something? I know I just saw Jay Daniels. I appreciate the fact that he – I hate when players like say, I screwed up and I got to do better. I'm like, I don't want to hear about you being a great quarterback and just then do it, then do better. And obviously he made that fumble late in that ball game. That was huge for the Washington Commanders. He's not the same guy we saw last year. And we always expect the guy to grow into a sophomore or junior year, depending on how you look at it. But in this particular case, I think it's just things are starting to slow down for him a little bit. I think he's looking at his reads better, and I think he's not running for his life like he was last year. But this could be a big ball game for the Cowboys. I know you got some futures action on those Dallas Cowboys, Kai. They're coming to this game 2-3. This would be a big victory for them if they could beat the Commanders.
This one's still a ways off. I want to see how, practice reports and injury reports and everything for Washington going into that game after, a disappointing loss last night for them. I just don't feel like they played anywhere close to the standard that they can, even though it's been kind of a slow start for Washington. I don't like anything about Dallas, and I sure don't like their defense. But where they're playing has something to do with it. So, I would probably just take both teams on the team total and take over and watch the game and have fun.
There you go. New Mexico State, Liberty later on tonight, by the way. Arkansas State, South Alabama, Florida International, Western Kentucky. We have three college games going on Monday. We have a college football every single day of the week. I just absolutely love that. It's going to be fantastic. So you can do some pros and some college. Make sure you bring the TV up from downstairs and maybe watch some Major League Baseball, too, as we got a game later on tonight the Major League Baseball continues. It's going to be LA and Brewers. So we got that game going on as well. I do want to jump around, man. I got a friend of mine who's actually listening on our Twitter account as of right now and wanted to talk about the UAB-Memphis game. Not specifically UAB-Memphis, but how teams react after they fire coaches. He said, look what UCLA has done since they let go of their coach. Why does that change so much? Does that say anything about the coaching staff at all? Is it just a change of tenure? Is it a change of culture in the locker room case? You've seen it enough. You've been around to see enough coaches get hired and fired. But we saw UCLA just flip that thing around. They look like a totally different football team they did 3 or 4 weeks ago. Can UAB do that?
I wish I could explain it better, but you've heard me here ever since we've been doing the show. I'm sure you've heard me talk about it. It's just happened so frequently that I do change my numbers a little bit. I give the team that has an interim coach coming in a bump because these teams just perform extremely well, especially in the first couple weeks with a new coach coming in. I was on UCLA the first game. I wasn't on them against Penn State, when they went at Northwestern, I was on them. So yeah, I don't know. There's just a long history of when an interim guy comes in, you get a 1 week boost. If I was speculating, I think it's probably a combination of all the things you talked about. The culture, usually who you're putting into an interim guy is someone that's well liked that the players want to rally around. But even more than that, I think it's just I think these guys feel pressure to at least make some subtle tweaks and do things a little bit differently when they're taking over. So if it's just changing some packages, a little bit of personnel, it just makes them a little bit harder to prepare for. So if I was speculating, I would say that's the biggest thing. But I mean, it's undeniable at this point. No matter how bad a team looks, you throw in an interim coach, it's nothing's 100%, but I'd say, three times out of four, that they look a little bit better the next week. So I'm always giving a little bit of an interim coach bump. That being said, I did not bet UAB this week. I think even with giving them a little respect against Memphis, I made it like 21.5, which is basically exactly where it is. But I would not be surprised at all if they do look better. We know they have some talent there. They have the quarterback in place. I don't know defensively if they have it together, but that's a game I skipped on. But I would stay away from laying it with Memphis just with the interim coach bump there.
All right, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You can leave your emails and get into it. Yeah, Kai, go ahead.
We talked about it, and Kip's texting us and listening. He says, the difference at UAB is no matter who the coach is, they don't have the players. Particular on defense, which I can agree with.
Hold on 1 second here. Before Trent got there, you're talking about a team that had won 7 games and had a winning record every year since 2017. They came back. They may not have the players. They're not going to compete at a national level. I get that, but as far as them going to bowl games every year, which is huge for a program of that size and being a Group of Five team, I'm not gonna poo poo on that and sit there and say that this team sucks every year. Yeah, he was 9-21. And I was going to ask you guys the question. We asked the question last week on the show, and we got a couple of emails on it. If Bill Belichick wants your job, do you have to give him that job? Trent Dilfer was not in that position. He was at Lipscomb. He's only 4 years, high school guy. I thought it was a great experiment for a school the size of UAB that obviously is a basketball school. Andy Kennedy's going to have his own issues now with 12 new guys on his basketball squad. I thought it was a great hire. I really did. Even at 9-21, I look back on it, and I know Mark Ingram's catching a lot of heat because he made that hire. A lot of people thought that Brian Vincent should have gotten that job. He ended up going to La Moreau. But at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, you know, we went outside the box. We thought outside the box. You get a guy that obviously worked for 8 or 9 years at ESPN, which is not a bad thing because, you know, he's got inside lines on perhaps the – now, do we see UAB more on ESPN? No. But, I mean, he certainly had a name. So I'm not – I don't know. I from an experimental standpoint, I know how important it was. And the fact that they had a winning record every year until Trent got there certainly doesn't paint it well for his tenure there at 9-21. But I still thought it was a good experiment. I thought it was a great – I thought it was a good hire. Am I off there?
I thought it was a horrible hire. I thought it was a horrible experience. I think UAB and the fans in Birmingham deserve better. And since you have a show with them and all that, I won't harp on what I think is just horrible with UAB. But, you know, unfortunately, they've always had to deal with Alabama and being part of that system and the Board of Trustees not allowing them to do what they should have done, including shutting the program down. You know, years ago, I went to UAB. I think it was a dumb move. You know, just like we said, Foster was over his head at UCLA. Well, there you go. Sam Pittman probably should have been let go a year or two ago at Arkansas. They jumped into this thing. I will tell you, Arkansas looked much better. Now, it may be that Tennessee's defense sucked, but Arkansas looked much better. UCLA got rid of Foster. What did they do? They turned around. They beat Penn State. They beat Michigan State on the road, hammered them as well. I think UAB is probably going to get abused. I do not think the recruiting was great. 21, I bought it down to 20.5 and got it because I had 21. And went ahead and got it at 20.5. I wish I'd done 20, but I wasn't going to buy that much. I think Memphis is going to come in and do whatever they want. Maybe UAB gets a bump in the first quarter. I don't know. But Dilfer had no business being there, and absolutely the right thing to let him go when they did, in my opinion.
I will totally agree with the fact that I think it was a great time to get rid of him. There was no reason to wait till the end of the year because he was a sitting duck. There was no reason for him. And at that point, honestly, the Army game got him fired. That was it.
I mean, they beat Alabama State and Akron, right?
Yeah, they're terrible. Listen, they're giving up 43 points a ballgame. This is a bad football team. It's a bad football team. I'm just saying overall, when I'm looking at experiments, when I'm seeing Trent, I thought the hire was a good hire. Now, obviously, in hindsight, you're looking back going, wow, he sucks. He's not good. He's 9-21. He won a state championship at college or at a high school level. So, I mean, it's like – and the problem is, do I think Trent Dilfer could be a good coach at the age of 53? Yeah, I think he's lousy at hiring assistants. Obviously, he just got rid of his entire coaching staff on the defensive side of the ball, and they were worse this year than they were last year. And offensively speaking, they're coming out, and they don't look like they want to play football. So he lost the team. There's no doubt that obviously they're going to be better without him there. But I, from an experimental standpoint, I thought it was probably kind of cool that they actually did that. And I think it put UAB on the map. I think people talked about it, but now, of course, they can certainly spit in their face. So, yeah, it is what it is.
Jumping back in, I will tell you this, because you talked about the three games tonight. I love that we're doing this on Tuesday so we can talk about the Tuesday and Wednesday night games for people that do want to get action down. You know, you got two crappy teams in New Mexico State and Liberty, but I kind of like the under there. Arkansas State, like I said, I'm never going to bet on Butch Jones, but I'll always bet against him. And Arkansas State has the 128 third down conversion rate defense out of 136 teams. It's pretty good for South Alabama. Western Kentucky tonight, Florida International, 121st third down defense. Western Kentucky over their team total.
Okay. Anything jumping out to you, Case, on that particular situation?
Well, I wasn't lying when I said I like all the favorites this week. It makes me uncomfortable, but I bet every single favorite tonight. The last two games, South Alabama and Western Kentucky have moved big my way, and Liberty has moved against me. I laid 11 with Liberty. It's down to 10. I've been way off on the Flames all year. I thought they were going to run away with the CUSA. I bet them a lot early. They couldn't get it done. Then I jumped ship last week. I think I took 3 with UTEP. UTEP never had a chance. Maybe I upgraded them too much off that UTEP win, but they looked really good last week. So I thought they'd have their way with New Mexico State. The offense looked a little bit better, but clearly that one's gone against me. Both South Alabama and Western Kentucky, I mean, it's kind of hard for me to say to bet it now at 7.5 and 10. I bet I don't have it in front of me. I know I bet South Alabama 7, and I bet Western Kentucky minus 7.5. So I guess Western Kentucky might still be okay. I mean, 7.5 to 10 is not huge. Lose some equity, obviously. But, if I had to pick, I'm still on all three favorites.
Kai, I know you're looking at games almost every single day of the week. Any other games, since we're here on Tuesday, we're going to be back until Friday at 10 o'clock. But any other games on Wednesday or Thursday, you're looking at three games every day of the week.
I think you're looking at a really, really good game tomorrow night between Delaware and Jacksonville State. Jacksonville State's been playing really well. So has Delaware, especially for the competition that are playing on each other. The other game, and I'm just not sure. Right now, I would take Jacksonville State, especially if I can get three at home. But Delaware, I wouldn't be surprised to see Delaware win the game. Tomorrow night, UTEP at Sam Houston. I mean, you've got UTEP giving three up to a Sam Houston State team that is defeated. Not undefeated. They're not 6-0. They're 0-6. So I would go UTEP there, you know, kind of just looking through those games. And then as far as Thursday night, Tulsa and East Carolina, if it gets up to 17, I almost have to take Tulsa, even though I think East Carolina is a much better team. I'd be interested to see what cases made the number in that game.
Wasn't Sam Houston one of the squads you were on big time early last year? Case, was that team you rode?
Early last year, but I've been against them very much this year.
Yeah, I think they're terrible. I remember last year you were hot on them.
Casey Keeler, who's now at Temple, who we've praised before. I think one of the best like low level FBS coaches. I think he's still on the rise. I didn't bet anything in that game. I'm looking at it now. I made. Who's the home team? I made the home team. Sam Houston, I made a 2.5 point dog. They're a 3 point dog. I didn't have anything there. I did bet Delaware when they opened a dog. They are a favorite now. I will say when we're diving deep on these Alabama coaching hires, it seems like Jacksonville State did a good job with I think Charles Kelly, their coach. It looked like, I mean, they were one of the biggest movers in the offseason win totals market. I think a few services must have released them. They just got slammed to the under. I think they might have opened like over under 6. It closed some places like 5 juiced over, like plus 110 over or something. And they've been pretty good. They're 500. I think they're the second favorite in the CUSA right now. So Jacksonville State might have done a good job with this coaching hire. I still think it probably regresses at some point. I think it's hard just when you turned over your roster that much and have such a few talent. That being said, Delaware, I mean, just moving up from FCS, but their quarterback kind of in the Haynes King mold, although puts up a lot of bigger numbers. I've been very impressed with the Blue Hens, and I think I made them a very slight favorite in the game. I made them a 1.5 point favorite, so I had to take it when they opened plus 2.5. Now it's right in range. I probably wouldn't bet it now, but that might be an interesting one to watch if you like getting really into the deep dive FBSC, two kind of up and coming coaches, two programs that have been better than anyone would have expected this year. I'm on Delaware as a dog, but I mean, if it got to 3 on the other side, I might be on Jacksonville State.
Delaware's minus 2.5 now.
Yeah, I wouldn't lay money with them again. It was just because I didn't think they should be the underdog.
Joe Flacco, Blue Hen, isn't he?
Oh yeah, you're right. I forgot about that.
I remember him coming to the league. I was like, wow, some dude from the Blue Hens. I always thought Blue Hens was one of the
1978 when he graduated.
It's been a while. Yeah,
he's Joe Flacco show today.
And unfortunately, like I said, you know, it's funny too. Wrote to jump around real quick. Jake Browning 2 years ago when Joe Flacco went out was 500. I think he went 7-7 with the Cincinnati Bengals. He was not a bad, and they had the same exact crew. Now, their offensive line was a little more smitten than it was, and they've obviously lost a lot of pieces, and Hendrickson now going out is not going to help. But, I mean, everyone thought in Cincinnati, okay, he's no Joe Flacco, and he's not a Joe Burrow, for God's sakes. But I mean, he's formidable enough. He's been in the league long enough that he should be able to hold the reins. And, man, he just looked horrible. And in fact, they actually went out and got a 41-year-old quarterback to see if they could just muster up a 5-0 record and make the playoffs. I should tell you something about that. Let's go to Major League Baseball. Seattle gets it done last night. They blew them out. They are now up 2-0 in their series. And we have the Dodgers and Peralta going for the Brewers tonight. Dodgers right now are up 1-0 on this. Of course, Kai does a lot of our baseball. We all love Major League Baseball, but any shot the Brewers can even up the series later on tonight, they're actually catching a little bit juice. 104 at home tonight.
Well, with Yamamoto or whatever his name is.
Dodgers.
Uh-huh. He's tough. I mean, I know I hated the way Milwaukee pitched last night, the way they had to go through it, and I think they got their rotation back. But there's no way I could bet against the Dodgers. I mean, he's an incredible pitcher. Now, he's much better at home than on the road, but I there's no way I can bet against the Dodgers in this pitching matchup.
Yeah, and I would say any other time when you can get Peralta plus at home, I mean, you're going to jump all over it, but there's a reason why he's actually catching some juice there. What's your thoughts on that case?
Yeah, I mean, I just can't help myself. I have so much Dodgers futures, both NL and World Series. I'm hoping they win, so I should probably be betting the other side. And I actually did last night when the Brewers got really high. I was still happy they lost, but last night when it opened minus 120, I bet some Dodgers. I don't see how that's the right number. It's still close to there. I still think you can get like minus 125. I made the Dodgers north of minus 140 here. I'm really high on Yamamoto. He usually does have like one bad inning, so it's possible if they get to him there. That could happen. I think he's a guy that's been, I think even his conventional numbers, you know, like the ERA, the WHIP doesn't paint as good as he's been this year. If you look, you know, at some of the advanced stats, and I really feel like Freddy Peralta is the other way. I feel like Peralta's gotten away with a lot this year. I think he gives up more hard hits than is reflected in kind of the traditional stats. So I like the Dodgers. I bet the Dodgers minus 120 for some stupid reason when I'm already on like pins and needles watching these games, hoping they get there. I also didn't bet it, but I also had a lean to the under for sure. I mean, you saw the Brewers only had two hits last night, and it's not like the Dodgers offense is raring right now. Otani in a big slump. I know they were a little bit better last night, probably could have scored more than two runs. But, yeah, I'm leaning the Dodgers again here today.
And I know you
Kip talked to it last week. I know he can't be on, but Kip was talking about this. If this matchup came, how much more he liked the Dodgers versus Milwaukee because of Milwaukee's lack of bats, if you will, in the way they play. Because I've talked about how much I love Milwaukee and how they play, and Kip even pointed out that he thought that is the reason why they would lose in this series, because of the way they pitch and hit.
Well, I mean, pitching got them there, period. No one really saw that. I mean, they've had Peralta for a while. They've had Ashby. They've had some guys that could obviously pitch for a long time. But when they came together and all of a sudden 1-4, one of the best in the National League, that's what really got them. It wasn't really their bats. But I agree with you. I do like the small ball approach. You just don't see people, you know, double steal. I try to do that in game one, which I thought was fantastic. Mariners, Blue Jays. And I know you have a lot of futures on the Mariners. You want to see the Mariners and Dodgers. They go up 2. You got to be pretty happy about that. And you got Bieber and Kirby going game 3. Has anybody looked at that line to see where you want to go with that? I just like Major League Baseball this time of the year because you're playing the same team over and over and over again. And you can really scrutinize the numbers and get down to the nitty gritty and make some money on it.
I'll tell you this real quick, though. The best part of the entire Major League Baseball postseason was Poppy and Vlad Jr. together. I talked about last week. Yankees lose over and over and over and over and over again. But I think that might have jinxed the hell out of them because Toronto's bats are just right now.
Yeah, this is another one where I haven't been able to help myself. I bet Seattle both the first two games, even though I make even more if Seattle wins the AL in the World Series. So I probably need less exposure. I haven't run the numbers or done anything for the next game. I know it opened like Seattle minus 130. Just my instant reaction was that seemed about right. Maybe I will lean off. Maybe I'll even take some Toronto like plus 1.5 in the series or something as a hedge. And yeah, I'm hoping not to feel like a jinx either when I'm just trashing the Brewers when it's only 1-0 and they easily could have won in the bottom of the ninth. But I think you nailed it. I think their real ascent was when the rotation just so came together and was so great for that stretch, you know, to the beginning of the second half of the season. And it's just not the same anymore. I mean, Mizorowski is still around, but he's not like unhittable.
He has not been the same guy since he came back. He looks
right. Woodruff's hurt. Again, I've said I'm skeptical of Peralta. And, you know, not to give away everything, but I just think, yeah, it's fine to marvel about, oh, I love how this team wins. They just always do the little things. They win the one-run games. But, you know, the way I'm doing it and trying to predict it going forward, like that stuff is just not that predictive. If you can basically scratch out everything else to me as noise, give me the starting pitching numbers and the power numbers. And I'm all like 99% of the time going to be going with the team with the better rotation and more power. And to me, that's the Dodgers clearly in that series. And it's a little bit closer in the other series, but I think it's Seattle. I will say something I've harped on a lot in the playoffs. Toronto does have some hidden edges in their defense. Their defensive numbers are sterling. I think they get to some balls some other teams don't. But I think as far as rotation and power, that's probably why I've landed on Seattle and the Dodgers all year and why I'm hoping they get there and get to the World Series so I can just kick my feet back and enjoy it 10 days or 2 weeks from now, whatever it is.
Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. What'd you got now?
I was just saying Kip did text and say he thinks Kirby dominates game 3.
All right. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. We have an email here from Tipper. He wants to know from Case, what's the best way to play the Grand Slam in NHL? A lot of people know what the Grand Slam number is. That's the over-under on total pucks scored. You can do it in Major League Baseball. You can't do it in NFL football because I think the number would just be too crazy. But that's always a bet that I like to play because you can have a couple of dinger games that don't go your way and still end up winning your bet. But what's the best way to play the Grand Slam in say, baseball and or – and you can play it in baseball too or the NHL.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you guys have different terminology. Again, I've always been in the legal sports betting realm, but everywhere here it's called the Grand Salami. I've never actually really towed in and bet it much. That being said, I know people that swear by it and say there's a lot of value there. Because obviously the sports books, it's not something they're really they're not tied to their monitors checking the Grand Salami numbers and seeing what bets come in. So I don't think it's a bad idea. I would say hockey, the number one thing I want to look for is goalies. Like yesterday, I don't know for sure, but I gotta assume it went over yesterday. It was a weird day, Canadian Thanksgiving, so there are a bunch of day games. A bunch of these teams at the last minute threw in their backup goaltenders. So if you have a day where, if you kind of dig into the schedule, now in this new age of, how much sports science and data we have and how much we know resting guys helps, most teams don't like to play their goalies more than like three games in a row at max. So if you really kind of pay attention to the goalies and feel like it's a day where teams are going to be playing mostly their starters, I think I'd look under. Or if it's a day like yesterday where, going in, we didn't know any of the assignments, and I think I did a bad job projecting some of them. I ended up losing just barely. I basically went 500 on hockey yesterday because some of these goalie confirmations just baffled me at the last minute. So if you have a day like that where it seems like a bunch of teams are playing their third game in 5 days or 6 days or whatever it is, and you're going to see some of these backups, there's just a huge drop off from the starters to the backups right now in the NHL and goal. I mean, it's kind of starting to mirror NFL starting quarterbacks to backups. So if you see a day like that, you got to be ahead of it because I'm sure they do move it when these guys get confirmed. But, a little bit of speculation there, maybe fire on the over on days when you think there's going to be a lot of backup goalies.
Wait, one way you do it too is like count the scores. I mean, if you have a 6.5, add the 6.5 to the 5.5 to the 4.5 to the 5 to whatever and see what you got. But inevitably, that Grand Slammy number is always going to be a little higher than what that number is. So that's not a really good indicator of whether you should go higher or lower, because obviously you could have an 8-7 game that's going to throw everything off kilter. And you could have a few of those 1-0 games too. Major League Baseball is fun that way, but I love it when you get down to last game where you need like over 8.5 runs for one ball game. And you got a full slate. We got a full slate of NHL tonight. Any plays before we let everyone fly here on anything tonight? Do you want to make any money on the NHL tonight?
My biggest bets, one of them hasn't moved much. I really like Montreal hosting Seattle. I bet -148, which I mean, there's still some -150s out there. I'm really down on Seattle, even though they just beat Vegas. They've looked pretty good the first two games. I think their goalie is very up and coming. Speaking of goalies, Joey Decord, but they're skaters. I don't think they have a much punch. I'm kind of down on the Canadians too. I bet them under points, but they've looked good in the first three games. They probably deserve to beat Toronto in game one. They bounced back and handled Chicago. I know it was closer on the scoreboard than it probably should have been, but yeah, I'm looking for spots to bet against Seattle, and this number came out a lot shorter than I thought, so I bet Montreal. And the other one, look at my other biggest bet. I was kind of groggy when we first came on. I was trying to get my kids to school, so I wasn't sure who was playing who, but I'm actually opposite of Kai this one. I really like the Lightning tonight at Washington. I know they're playing a back-to-back, but they played probably the worst goalie in the NHL yesterday, Jonas Johansson. Somehow I still got away with betting them. Vasilevsky will be back in tonight. I'm really high on the Lightning, as we've discussed on the show. So I bet the Lightning +105. I know now it's like pick 'em. I don't have my NHL numbers up. I think I probably made them in that range, but I still lean to the Lightning as long as you can get better than like -110 probably.
All right, K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. If you're in around the Birmingham area tonight, of course, we show's international. Kip Kiefer is having his birthday party. We're going to be at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino later on tonight on the casino level. Make sure you check him out and wish him a big happy birthday. His birthday was yesterday. My son actually is having a birthday on Friday. My son Santo turns 21, so we celebrate his birthday. Yeah, he turns the big 21. It's pretty, I can't believe
the one that goes to Clemson?
Uh-huh.
All right. Happy birthday to Kip and Sam. Yeah. Say his name.
Santo.
Sorry, I knew that. Happy birthday, Santo and Kip.
Thank you very much.
Santo's happy birthday live on Friday when his birthday is.
There you go.
I'll see you tonight, buddy.
We'll definitely do that. All right, guys. Have yourself a wonderful day. Happy birthday to you, Kip. Hip Cover Dog. Sorry you couldn't get on. I'm glad you could chime in on text. you're better when we can hear and observe your lovely face. So we'll get after it. Special thanks to Duncan, Dan, of course, the entire crew at the Digital Coastal Network. They do a wonderful job as well. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll catch up again on Friday. Go get them.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.